Hello and welcome to Witchy Wellness Radio. I'm your host, Lauren Chalantani, women's holistic health coach and fellow recovering perfectionist. This podcast was created to show you that your body is not in the way. It is actually leading your way. Welcome back to Witchy Wellness, everybody. You are listening to episode 126, Archetypal Subconscious Programming with Dr. Frances Yahia. A few words from our sponsors. Living the Good Life Naturally Magnesium is my go-to brand for transdermal application. Did you know that your stress and diet and lifestyle alone can increase your magnesium burn rate, which means depletes you even faster? While using a product like a soak or a lotion on your skin, magnesium is easily absorbed and can replenish your macronutrients. To learn more, listen to episode 73 with founder Kristen Bowen and head over to the show notes to use that link. And make sure to use code WITCHY, W-I-C-T-H-Y, for 10% off of your purchase. And Institute for Integrative Nutrition is the school I went to nearly 7 years ago. It started me on this health and wellness and eventually spiritual and self-help journey. It's not just a program if you want to become a coach. I started it for my own well-being and health. And not only did I learn so much from this experience, but I made so many deep, authentic friendships, but was propelled into this online world. And I love it so much. I'm a part of their referral program. If you guys head over to the show notes or my website, laurenchalantani.com/IIN, you can sign up for a free class to see what they have to offer. And if you're interested, make sure that you mention that Lauren Chalantani referred you, because you guys are able to get the latest and greatest discounts available. And without further ado, please enjoy episode 126, Archetypal Subconscious Programming with Dr. Frances Yahia. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Witchy Wellness Radio. I am your host, Lauren Chalantani, and this is a show you get to learn that your body and emotions are not in the way, but actually leading the way. And our beautiful guest today, Dr. Frances Yahia, is here to talk about helping people uncover their subconscious patterns that keep them from reaching their full potential. We are all about that on Witchy Wellness. A little bit more on Dr. Yahia. She is a mental health counselor, Akashic Records reader, archetypal astrologer, podcast host, and college professor. She uses universal laws, metaphysics, mythology, and astrology to create theories and therapeutic tools to help her clients heal subconscious wounds and transgenerational trauma. In her most recent book, The Seven Gates, Seven Steps Beyond Self-Awareness, is a seven-step model that teaches you how to take your power back. Whew. I am so excited to dive into each of those seven gates and so much more. Welcome to the show, Dr. Frances.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, of course.
I just love the title of your podcast.
Oh, thank you. It came to me a few years before I even started the show, and I didn't know what it was for. I thought it was going to be a coaching program was what I thought it was going to be. And then it perfectly aligned to become this show, and almost 4 years later, we're here and have beautiful guests on like you that we can go as woo as we want. We talked off air. It's like, how woo do we want to go?
I love all that. The way
beyond. Let's go.
So I'm a big archetype person, and I call myself an archetypal astrologer. And Witchy Wellness is archetype of Lilith. And my podcast is Mistress of the Subconscious, which is also the archetype of Lilith. So this is perfect. And my metaphysical college is Hidden Truths, which is also Lilith. So she is the woo of all woos. She is the witch of all witches. So this is so up my alley. And thank you for having me.
Oh, you're so welcome. And I wanted to start the show with, how did you get into the woo? How did you connect to your inner Lilith? Because I know you are conventionally trained as a therapist as well. Was this always a part of you, or what was this transformation that got you to doing the things you do today?
Well, I was actually born into a cult. So it wasn't originally a cult, as I would say, in the sense of a cult at the beginning in the early years. it was actually quite a strong spiritual community with really good spiritualist teachings. And I'm all about the origin story and the creation myth. And I think I'm quite lucky because my parents were the material arm of the spiritual center. So I learned at a very young age that spirit and matter are always together. You can't separate them. So I love what you said about the body and emotions not getting in the way. So I teach and write a lot about that concept. Spirit and matter are always together. You cannot do the transcendent out of the form. This is the vehicle. This is the vessel. So I stayed in that community my childhood. And then I was put into an arranged marriage with the cult leader's nephew. That didn't go too well. I had some kids and I did not want my kids to be raised in that community because the values had really skewed from the original values from childhood. So I and my husband at the time also agreed. We both took our separate ways, but we both left. So lucky my kids weren't born into that. But the spiritual foundation, the need to teach people to not have sort of reliance on gurus and cults or any teacher, as a matter of fact. You are the guru you've been looking for. There is a need for mentorship and spiritual teachers along the path, and I write a lot about that, but it's your path. So that was sort of a big takeaway. Then I met another man who was a very, very strong medium, helped me a lot in terms of my own mediumship development. And then we split, and I somewhat entered an existential crisis. And of course, I went to my altar, I threw everything away, and I screamed at God. And, you know, a little dramatic, I'm Cuban, so I'm inherently dramatic. And I'm like, if you are real, give me a sign. And the book, The Zohar, fell off the shelf. And it opened to a quote, and this quote changed my life and really showed me my mission, my vision, my purpose. And the quote is that there's no coercion in spirituality. And I realized that up until that moment, I was 33 at the time, that's all I really had known, just spiritual coercion. And so I decided at that moment that I was going to change that for myself. And if I could impact others along the way, that was my mission. I found a phenomenal astrology teacher. I was led to the Akashic Records. I was led to shamanism and really just started studying all the sort of arts in this beautiful tradition. And I call myself a synthesizer. And then I started writing theories and I tie in myth and symbol and metaphor. Everything I teach and write about is tied into universal law. And I just sort of opened a creative fountain and have written 7 books. And they're all tied on universal law, mythology, metaphor, depth psychology. I am trained as a mental health counselor. And I just, from my origin story of this cult and much of what I write about led me to this. So I'm not traditional in the sense, in any way, in my practice, but I do sort of dabble in the depth psychology realm, if you're going to call it something, with Jungian psych. But I tap into the psyche and the subconscious all day, every day. It is fascinating. That's where it's at. So Lilith is my mentor, and she is always guiding me to the next phenomenal shadow aspect, gate, you name it. It's phenomenal to have her as a guide.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm going to have to consciously bring her in because I know she's there all the time. But
yeah, I have a theory, a book that's actually coming out later this year called Spiritual Adulting. Ooh. And I have what I call Spiritual Adulting Brain Map. And it starts, I use the planets as archetypes, with the moon, and it ends with the black moon, Lilith. And I speak to the entire process from our entire life, from womb to tomb. And she's really the key to self-mastery, self-discovery, to really bringing out the divine in self and leading us to our self-mastery and what we're all here to do. She's just, it's a shame that she's been depicted, you know, as evil and demonic throughout mythology. I write to Sumerian and Babylonian myth and Hebrew myth. And ultimately at the root, it was just to keep us from our own divine forces and our divine power. because she holds that wisdom. And I have this thing called the inner child slumber party that I do with clients. And we talk about this. And at the end, I ask clients, how does it feel to know you're not a child of God, that you're a child of no one? Like Lilith, you are God, you are divine. And basically the universe supports that wisdom, because that was her whole message. I will not be submissive to you. I am you. And when you reach that level of self-awareness and knowing the good and the bad, because it's their shadow along with the light, the third chakra, the self-worth, the power just ignites in people, and it's nonstop. It's just very powerful. So I just use her as my guide for practically everything that I do. But it's a shame that she was so demonized. But it does speak to the psyche and the shadow, and a big aspect that I write about in Seven Gates, in all of my work. But Seven Gates is a foundation of that work, which is what I call the bad buckets, which is we have to get really down and dirty with our shadow. We have to get really comfortable with our desirous, lustful, envious, greedy side so that we can be whole. And she helps with that too.
Beautiful. Yeah, I love how you tied that into the chakras, because so many of us, I feel like we're living out of those lower three survival energy centers. At least for me, is once I started looking into those and those programs and those archetypes that are tied to that, it was very healing to be able to move into your heart. Because for me, and still day to day, if I'm stressed or if I'm triggered, a lot of the times it's because my heart's closed. It's shut down from whatever. So it's, for me, it's looking at usually the lower three, what's going on where I can't feel safe enough to open up that heart. And sometimes it is the heart as well, but I love tying those together to help us understand, because I start off every episode asking your own origin story, because we learn from stories. We can relate. We learn from these archetypes. We learn from these heroes' journeys, and we can start to make those connections in our heads instead of thinking we're sitting here listening to a college boring lecture or something.
Right. So I have a little different of a theory with the lower chakras. Uh-huh. And I agree with what you've stated, but one of the things that I see is the lack of desire or the fear to enter specifically the second chakra. So I write a lot about the origin story or the creation myth of the person. And we are here living out the story that in my four steps of the model of the subconscious development, the first step is the moment of conception. As lovely as the conception story might be, as much love and flowers and romance, there is a desirous thought and lust or greed or envy or wealth, whatever the issues that your parents were going on with in that moment of their life, is part of your shadow aspect. And that's housed in the second chakra. And oftentimes we want to remove the impure thought from our story. And it's actually, it's a sentence, in addition to there's no coercion in spirituality, the other quote that saved my life was from the Odyssey. And it's when Odysseus returns home to re-encounter with his wife Penelope, and they're in the bedroom. And there's a statement in that text that says, you can't separate the olive branch from the marital bed. And in that story, the olive branch was actually coming out from the ground, and it wrapped around the marital bed. So the marital bed was stuck in the room. And only Penelope and Odysseus knew this. And when I read that, it made a lot of sense. In that marital bed or bar or bathroom or wherever you were conceived, there's an olive branch, and it's you. You are the unity between mom and dad. And that's what the Seven Gates is about. The good and the bad qualities of your mother and father are you. And the key to the olive branch, which is self-love, self-forgiveness, the fourth chakra, third chakra first, and then the fourth, is to accept all parts, the ugly, the beautiful. So I find a lot of resistance with clients entering that second chakra. And our origin story is woven into every story we tell. So I can listen to any story at any age, and I can tell you your conception and what you were birthed on or conceived on. And it's great when clients have access to their parents to actually get the story, but conception isn't one of those that we most of us know about. So that's sort of one of the gifts that I have. And then I tie it into the pregnancy, the birth, and then the 0 to 7 story, which just elaborates what's from the conception. The subconscious is developed at conception. The mind that your parents had at that moment, dad closed the deal and he felt great. Mom was tired and wants to make dinner. All of those thoughts. And we see that in the astrology chart. It's literally the map of the psyche is woven into every conflict that we have with ourselves that then we live out as conflict with others. So those critical voices are what I call competitive voices. So the second chakra, I'm getting very, very comfortable with desire, is something that clients struggle with. Then once you saturate, and I have something called a spiritual TED talk that I go with clients through, and I teach them, once you saturate and you realize what those, you know, sort of desirous thoughts are that you've been judging that lead to self-betrayal and self-hatred, then you can go to the third chakra. The third chakra is the fire chakra, the Manipura, the crown of jewels, the self-worth. It's in the lower nature for a reason, because we can only have our transcendent function in the body. So the archetype of Chiron, the wounded healer or the centaur, is intentional that his lower nature and his higher nature smack at the third chakra, is where the animal and the divine, or the human and the animal, meet. And the same is for us. So I have a theory I call Man Your Fires, and it comes from a myth from Hestia in Greek mythology. She was the virgin goddess responsible for manning the fires in the Agora. She couldn't participate in any other cult worship. She had to stay the center manning those fires. And if we learn that, and I have a book called Dethroning Olympus where I teach this, if we learn to man our own fires, what I call the 48 to 52, stay on our throne, then we don't take from another and another doesn't take from us. Then we can go to the fourth chakra, what's called Aphrodite Urania or agape love. And then we can show up for another. But we can't do it the other way around, and we can't skip the step of the second chakra. We can't skip the third chakra step and just jump to the fourth chakra. Like, it's in order for a reason. So oftentimes that heart chakra is closed, and you're right. And I need my fourth chakra for my Akashic Records reading and anything that I do in terms of divination or mediumship. But when something comes up, it's second chakra to then go up sort of the ladder of the chakras. And a lot of people get burnout because they try to live in the higher chakras without anchoring themselves into the truth and reality of the shadow in the lower chakras.
Mm-mm-mm. That's so beautifully said. We said it in the intro, your transgenerational trauma and how you can use the power of your subconscious to heal that now. How do you, I mean, you have theories for everything, but how do you help people work through this? Because I don't think people, they might realize, yes, like mom and dad, I have those, especially what you just described. But I'm talking generational, even science today, epigenetics has proven they can actually show us that an emotional event, they can see it in our genetics up to 7 generations later.
Absolutely. They're doing a lot of research on Hiroshima.
Yep.
And generations after. I work with a gentleman from Peru, and he's a scientist, and he says that you can even see it in the rats, the generational trauma from the rat, and how it's the divine feminine or the feminine that can heal it. And again, the feminine is not reserved to the female. It's just an energy that we all possess. But so let me tell you the 4 steps of the subconscious, and then I'll address the transgenerational trauma. So at the moment of conception, all you're doing is identifying a vibration, so law of vibration, with your parents at that moment. Your parents might get divorced. You may not know your parents. does not matter if you're abandoned, adopted. It does not matter. At the moment of conception, you have the exact same vibration as your parents do at that moment. Your soul chose those parents, their vibration, not their faces, to live out the life. You needed a vehicle. You needed a body. That's the purpose of your parents. Bert Hellinger, father of Batman Constellation, says this. Your parents gave you life and that's enough. What happens when your spirit is given a body? You're given, so your biology, to speak to the genetics, you're given a level of consciousness, which is always low level consciousness, second chakra. You're given an emotional pattern or emotional matrix, and you're given a body. So everything you need at the moment of conception, of course, during pregnancy, the body develops, is already in you at the moment of conception. So that also includes the transgenerational trauma that is in part of your mission, what your parents were unable to sort of solve, that you're here to sort of pick up. And I'll speak to that a little bit more. The second stage of subconscious development is pregnancy. That's where you get what I call your shadow love language. So we speak about the love languages, which are great, but there is a shadow side, and this is found in your moon sign. The moon sign in your astrology chart has a shadow side. And we end up, like the moon, changing our faces. The moon has eight faces in order to get our needs met with that moon sign. And it isn't honest. It isn't legitimate. It's shadow work. And we have to sort of start removing those masks. That's what you get during pregnancy. It's almost like a secret language between you and mom that says, this is how you get your needs met. Because two lies we've been told. Your needs have never been met as a child, and there's four unmet needs we all have. And your parents did not love you unconditionally. So that's our job in this lifetime, is to meet our own needs and to love ourselves unconditionally. I spell all of this out in my books. The third stage of the subconscious is the birth. The birth story links to every single transition you will have in life, namely your first sexual transition and your death. The point of dying small deaths throughout life, and there is a belief, and I'm a believer of that, that the purpose of life is to learn how to die. I call them skinny cows linked to our Saturn cycles in astrology. Those small deaths teach us how to rewrite our birth story, our transition story, so that we can transition out of life, out of the form in the final transition differently. And then our 0 to 7 story, where we are there present. And now this is the story we share, you know, on your podcast, which is what I call our snow globe shattering. Your childhood, no matter how great or horrible, is a snow globe in your psyche. And there's a moment in your psyche where your inner child is sort of branched off and said, I'm not wanted, loved, or worthy as I am. That creates our shadow, our second chakra. Again, this all started at the moment of conception, but now we're present with the story, with the characters and the costumes and the locations. So all of this happens before 7. That's it. We've got it all. So I write all of this out in my theories. I've got a ton of videos and workbooks and everything for free on my site. So there's no, you know, necessity to buy anything. I present this to people because I was grown up in a cult and no one explained any of this. And I had to rely on teachers, and I don't want that for anyone. And what happens is, in that story, we get the transgenerational patterns. But what happens is, now we grow up, we get into relationship, we have this shadow love language, job, friends, children, work, everything. And we're like, I need you to meet my needs. So I'm going to pretend and wear a mask. And Lilith loves to unmask us. That's her whole dance of Salome. The seven gates is from an Anonymous, which is another metaphor for Lilith. It's what I call a spiritual striptease. So our point is to remove these masks so that we are nuda veritas, the goddess of truth, naked truth. So that's why she's depicted as the prostitute or veils or demons. It's, again, it's to keep us from the truth, which is ourself. And that's the only key to self-mastery, is to getting really down and dirty with our second chakra, our lower nature. So we get into relationships and friendships with a secret language taught at conception and through pregnancy, put on this mask, the moon sign, so that you can get your needs met through pretending
that you're meeting the other person's needs. It's all about you. So when you are third chakra manning your fires, you stop that nonsense. You learn to be clear. You ask for what you need. The other person has a right to say no. You show up as what I call a spiritual adult. And now your needs are met, their needs are met, and now we're in clarity. Now we can do deeper work. Only there can we begin, and I say begin, to start healing transgenerational trauma. Why? We have a vicious cycle in our psyche. I call it sacrifices and offerings. And this is written throughout mythology. I just use those specific words. In the Cain and Abel story, where the offering to God wasn't accepted. Like, we have seen this throughout with Abraham. Offer Isaac. Oh, now you owe me the covenant to God. We have that same thing in our psyche with our parents. So if now I'm deciding to man my fires, take off my mask and love myself, oh my God, I just told my parents basically screw off. So now what do? We engage in sacrifices and or offerings. Offerings are necessary. In Greek mythology, when we would cross the river Styx, we'd give an obol that was like a coin to Charon, the ferryman. So if we're going to have a transition, a small death, a dark night of the soul, some skinny cow, anything that's for growth, we have to pay something. But it is shown in mythology that it's a coin, a piece of cake, something small. Oh no, we don't do that. We blow up our life. We destroy our relationships. We get fired. Like, we create COVID. I mean, big time sacrifices that we do as humans in order to show we're worthy and we're allowed not to lose the love from mom and dad and to gain permission to move up and change the story. So it's a very heavy price. At that point, if you keep giving sacrifices, you lose children. You might go bankrupt, whatever your story is from the origin, to honor mom and dad. Then we don't heal the trauma. It's only by being in that third chakra, manning our fires, giving small offerings as we do, and what I call transmutation, not transformation. Transformation is behavior change. It does not lead to any raising of consciousness. Transmutation is belief change. When we start changing our beliefs that we deserve to have unconditional love of self, meet our own needs, ask for what we need, man our fires, then we can start healing the trauma. But there's a law called the law of the pendulum, a law of polarity, where I call the 0 to 100. We have these swings, 0 to 100, 0 to 100. We do the exact same as our parents or the exact opposite. It's the same coin, different side. It's what I call the 48 to 52, the neutralizer of those swings. And there are marked years that we have neutralizers enter our life to help us stop those swings. When we start living in that 48 to 52, that midpoint, that Tao, that self-mastery, then we can start transmutation, change our beliefs. Then we can start changing the transgenerational trauma. It's not easy. It's the work of a lifetime, but it's worth it.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I know a lot of people, I guess you're referring to like Saturn returns, right? For some of those.
Not only Saturn returns. We have every 7 years, we have a Saturn cycle. I call those the skinny cows. Yep. It's from the story of Joseph in the Bible. And that's what it's referred to. And the fat cows are the Jupiter. And we actually have a dance. Saturn, Jupiter. Saturn is 7 years, Jupiter's 12 years. Well, there's a 5-year gap. Five is the number of man, of individuation, of spiritual growth. So the Fibonacci spiral actually starts the curvature at five, at a 5-year in numerology, for instance, which is like fun and growth. So it's a dance of these fat cows and skinny cows. The more work we do in our skinny cow, the more we detach, the more we learn, the bigger and fatter our spiritual growth is with Jupiter 5 years later. And so that's what that story in the Bible refers to when Pharaoh had that dream. So those are important. The 28 to 30 Saturn return cycles, yes, are very marked. I teach a lot about in spiritual adulting, and I have a bunch of videos on my YouTube about this, where our first Saturn opposition happens between 14 and 16. That is the beginning of our entire spiritual infrastructure. That is when we try to pull away from our parents' value systems. Of course, they shut that down And at 28, in the myth, Saturn was castrated. We castrate ourselves. At 14, our parents castrate us. Oh, no, no, don't do that. At 28, we castrate ourselves. At 42, which is the Uranus opposition, that's when we blow up our life or create some sort of chaos to start our real spiritual infrastructure based on our values. And usually there's like a Pluto around there somewhere lingering. And this is all Lilith waiting for her to get her turn to get you to the spiritual striptease, which is for you to see what I call the seven gates, all of the masks that you wear. And I have a real step-by-step process, seven steps in that book. And I've written extensively about what I call the spiritual TED talk, the spiritual STD that leads you to the spiritual striptease, which is then you having the ruby red slippers to take yourself home. But you can't skip the darkness, the shadow, the striptease if you want to heal transgenerational trauma or any trauma. It's impossible.
Yeah. And I like to remind people that, you know, your soul signed up for this. It's nothing that you can't handle. And I love what you say, that the dark is just as important as the light, and we have to move through that and transmute it. And transmutation, transmute, that word for me, if I, you know, it's turning something into like a silver, if alchemy is what I think of,
right.
into gold. And absolutely. For me, it's, I always think of the quote, life is not happening to me, it's happening for me. And that, and I mean, that's the basis of the show, is looking at yourself, your body, your emotions, life. It's not in your way. You're not a victim to it. It's leading your way. It's showing you where that growth and that potential is. But you have to transmute it. And
I have a theory called therapeutic bypassing. And the concept is actually from hemophilia. It's a client is so attached to their story that they will bleed out and stay a victim rather than coagulating the aspects of their psyche. And we have to, and part of that coagulation is that second chakra work, that low level consciousness that we inherit, that we chose at the moment of conception, because I spoke to that before. We chose our parents on vibration. The low-level consciousness. That's why Jesus was born in a manger. The animal low-level consciousness that we come to transmute. In my shamanic training, I speak to this little Cherokee story where the grandfather says to the grandson, there are two wolves living inside of everybody, a dark wolf and a light wolf. And the little boy is like, who wins? And the grandfather says, depends which one you feed. And it's actually not. It's actually feeding both. And raising them up together, both your light and your dark, then you can transmute. That's the idea of the two serpents, the Ida and the Pingala, up the chakra system to the third eye. It's when you balance masculine and feminine, spirit and matter, light and dark, that then you can reach Uribos, which is the unity and the wholeness. And that, of course, opens up your intuitive gifts and so much more. But you have to buy in. Well, you don't have to, but in my work, if you don't buy in, then you're just victim, is you buy into that you created all of it because it serves you. And when you have that agency that you created everything, it's really powerful. As a shaman is simply someone that walks the worlds between the worlds, both spirit and matter. But we have a saying in my shaman class that shamans do not manage symptoms. So even though I'm classically trained as a therapist, I don't manage symptoms. And I honor your story, but we use the story to get all of the information to do the work. And everything I teach is rooted in universal law. And the universal law that I live my life by, I live by all eight, but really is the law of correspondence, as within, so without. So I have this worksheet called the Sphere of Consciousness Worksheet. If you allow it into your sphere of consciousness, it's there to teach you something from your bad buckets, which is the language from my book, which is linked to second chakra and the shadow, and your moment of conception, your pregnancy, your birth, your 0 to 7. So we are constantly walking the world if we learn to pay attention. And if that's the first question I ask clients. What did you allow to enter your sphere of consciousness this week? Because we allowed it in because it's there to give us information. It doesn't mean that we have to address it that moment, but I have a thing called the Mr. Potato Head. So I Mr. Potato Head it. And after a few weeks or months, if I start seeing a recurring theme, well, then it's time to look at it because I've allowed it to enter enough that it has to be addressed and defined and put through the process. So that's the advantage of owning that you've created and that life is happening for you, is that you really maximize what you allow to enter and the story rather than being a victim. And it doesn't mean that I'm minimizing my own pain or my client's pain. No, what happened sucked. In the earthly realm, it sucked. But let's not stay in that consciousness. Let's go to the spiritual consciousness so that we can transmute it and just keep getting information from the story.
Mm-mm-mm. I love that. I want to transition because we haven't even talked about those seven gates yet. And if you can, could you do a brief, I guess, intro about those seven gates in that process?
Yes. So that is actually, it's a myth of Lilith, but it's Inanna, a Sumerian myth, where Inanna is the sister of Ereshkigal, who is the queen of the underworld, and Inanna is the queen of the upper world. And she gets a phone call, so to speak, that Ereshkigal's husband had died. And Inanna has to go visit her sister. And she has to enter seven gates. And you're going to see seven repeated in spirituality. Seven planes, seven original planets, seven chakras. These are, and I don't like the Christian verbiage, but the seven deadly sins or the Shadripus in Hinduism or the vices in Nicomean ethics. So we see this repeated. And so these seven gates that Inanna has to go through, with each one, some article of clothing is taken from her. When she gets to Ereshkigal's door at the funeral, she's naked. And Ereshkigal's like, you've humiliated me. You've embarrassed me. I'm going to kill you. And she hangs her on a butcher's hook. And from that death, there's a rebirth. It's the original Jesus story. And we see this motif, obviously, throughout spirituality. Inanna was pregnant. So from the death, obviously, birth, rebirth cycle, a newborn, after you have gone through the spiritual striptease, you've gotten really naked and truthful with self, and you've sort of gone through these gates. I also speak that every gate has seven more gates, like sub-gates. And you see this in the St. Teresa of Avila. Carolyn May speaks about this in Entering the Castle, the interior castle. Like this motif has been repeated. So when I take clients through the seven gates and that spiritual striptease, now they have the rule book or the philosophy of life. I'll speak to that. Those are step six and seven. And once you have that sort of, you know, rule book, now you have all the tools. You don't need me. Teachers are meant to be momentary. And of course, you can always come back and visit, right? Your third grade teacher. But it's now you're outfitted with all the tools to now every time in a skinny cow, because it's going to come every 7 years, another seven gates. And now you've got the spiritual setup with the tools for you to navigate when those skinny cows show up. So it starts with the moment of conception. So the first step of the model, and the first three are what I call the spiritual TED Talk. This is the secret sauce. Those first three steps are gold. In about 2 seconds, you can diffuse anything. Create the space to show up and be mindful. Like, this is just an ongoing process forever. But the first question is the person, place, thing, or situation mother or father? Every single thing is mother or father. Doesn't matter if you knew your father, your mother, you were abandoned, adopted, they died. It does not matter. They're in your psyche. They are you. You are them. You're the olive branch to join these two aspects. So the moment something shows up on a scale of 1 to 10, the inner child does not care. The shadow does not care if it is a huge flood in your house or the fork fell at the restaurant. It does not care. So if it causes any sort of strife, frustration, negative thought, you immediately have the TED Talk. First question, is this mother or father? If you've done the psychological x-ray, which is what I call the child script, the bad buckets and the good buckets, you have the framework of it. And that's usually where I start with clients, but all of this is in the book and free on my website. So that psychological x-ray gives you your whole psyche. If you can identify this behavior, oh, I'm angry and my mom was angry, bad bucket item, it's mom. Why that question? Once you identify it's mother or father, you're already in child. Child is two things. I need my needs met. I need love. It's going to be unconditional love. I mean, conditional love, and it's not going to be a healthy way to get your needs met. It's the moon. So that's the first question, is to set you up as, oh, I'm in child. Right there, you can change your whole life. Second step is, what don't I like about it? The moment you don't like something, I have a saying says, judgments are confessions, and they're great. People are like, oh, stop judgment. Oh, no. Judgments are phenomenal. Why? They tell you about yourself, what you really think about yourself, and why your inner child is acting up, why your shadow isn't integrated, why you're not coagulated. And it tells you what you value. They're bad bucket values. You have to accept that you're lustful, desirous, and you've got some greed, and you've got some envy, and you've got some hubris. Oh, well, we all do. Then you can look to your good values. But first, you have to identify that you have what are bad bucket value systems. Oh, well, that exists in the moment of conception. The moment you can identify what you're judging, you can link it back to yourself. You either are currently doing that same behavior, have done it in the past, or are capable of doing it in the future. It's all about you. When you can say, oh, I don't like this person because they look overweight, you're judging. Vanity is your value system. You have an issue with image. And I'm sure there's a story in 0 to 7 about your mom wanting you to be pretty, whatever. That diffuses 90% of things because it brings right back to you. And the third question is, what need does it fulfill to judge your vanity, let's say, to prove you're unlovable, unworthy, not capable, abandoned, whatever that is. The other way to say it is, what does it prove about you? It proves that you're ugly. It proves that you're not worthy if you don't look a certain way, whatever that is. No answer is wrong. Those are the child steps and the spiritual TED talk. If you do that with every negative thought that shows up, you are 90% of the way there. That is the hardest part. And the resistance I get from clients, it's like, really? You didn't do the TED talk? Like, I mean, it's so easy. So you have to get into the habit, but you have to buy into that you created it, that everything's about you. Like, it's hard. It's a process. Then you move to the spiritual striptease. That's when you say, think, and do. This is a transition, what I call teenager and then adult. And then I've written a book called Spiritual Adult, which is sort of the whole transmutation process. So step 4 is crucial. This is the hardest thing for people to do, is define the need from step 3. If it's that you're not enough, if you're abandoned, if you're unworthy, if you're ugly, if you're not, whatever. But this is the key. It has to be defined in a measurable, observable terms. So if you say, I want love, he didn't love me, it shows I'm not lovable. Define unlovable or lovable, but it has to be in measurable, observable terms. I always tell clients minimum of 3 criteria. Are you lovable when you wear an orange hat, yellow socks? I have to know, me as an outsider, see it. That's the adult steps. We don't hold ourselves accountable. We enjoy being less than because we want to sacrifice and prove our parents right over and over and over. And if we actually do that step and do it correctly, and now we can hold ourselves accountable, we've just moved from sacrifice to offering. I am not going to let my parents dictate any longer. I'm coagulating those aspects of my psyche. I'm growing up my inner child. I'm allowing myself to man my fires. Now what? Then what do I have to complain about? So that step is extremely important. It's a step to the adult. Then you have to write how you're going to meet the need for yourself. Then you write a rule book, aka a philosophy. I could tell you that most people, I'll ask a question, what are your top 2 values in life? It can't be family. And people look at me like if I have 3 heads. They have no clue. That's the most common response. The second is, hold on, let me Google values. And the third is integrity, honesty, authenticity, and they can't define it. So if you cannot define your values, they're not your values. You're probably trying to cover up a second chakra, bad bucket value system that you don't want to own. I work so hard, AKA sloth, is a value that you have from the bad buckets. So I spell all this out in the work. And then step 7, and on Witchy Wellness, of course, people love ceremony and ritual. And I have a whole book called Witch Bitch, and Witch Bitch Volume 2 is coming out next year, all on ceremony and ritual that are divinely guided. My guides gave them to me in the records. And there's for all types of things in there. So, and in Seven Gates, there's 28 ceremonies and rituals. And they really help to anchor the new belief system. They help you sort of let go as a transition, like these liminal spaces as we're transitioning. They let us let go of the old and transition into the new. That's why I have it as step seven. It's optional, but I engage in ceremony and ritual a lot. And I find it very useful to sort of bring that transcendent into the earthly realm. So us witches love that stuff. So those are like the seven steps. I'm telling you, the spiritual TED Talk is phenomenal. And then it gets you out of the child script. It gets you out of that sort of fight or flight, the emotions. And I have a whole section in the book about how the body is a loyal servant to the psyche. And I have an emotions wheel, and I speak about listening to the emotions, and I have activities about where to feel, where you hold emotions. And I have a whole theory on emotion to feeling. Emotion is not processed, it's stuck. We need to feel it through. And I had cancer for 5 years. Trust me, I felt a lot of things that I had kept pent up. I don't want people to get cancer. It's much better after a session, I'll get a call. I had a migraine for 12 hours, or I was grieving for 12 hours. I'm like, great, you just saved yourself cancer. When we go through the process of seeing these dark aspects, of course it's a jolt. We've been told, be a good person, help the neighbor. And you start realizing the darkness of your shadow, of your thoughts, it will sometimes give you a migraine or, you know, some sort of bellyache or something. But it's better to have that, which is emotion to feeling, than have a pent up emotional energy. That's energy. Energy is materialized in the body as illness. So it goes somewhere. If you have an unprocessed thought, it's going to go two places, either in your body as illness or in your world as something disruptive that you don't like to see either in news or in your family. So process the heck out of your thoughts. That's what step two is. That is going to save a lot of heartache.
1000%. I agree. You know, our teachers can manifest as illness or as somebody coming into your life that isn't the best for you, but is a really good teacher. I've definitely learned through both.
I call those the nemesis, the end years. So we've got swings of that pendulum that I mentioned. And in astrology, they are Saturn cycles. But we've got what I call nemesis years or valor years, end years or V years. The end years are like the 7, 21, and so forth. Those stop the swings. Mm-hmm. And they oftentimes show up as a nemesis. Took your boyfriend, fired you. The valor years are linked to 14, 28. Where you really have to get clear on your value system and not just live out your parents' life.
Ooh, I like that. Oh my goodness. We could just talk for hours.
Hours.
I'm like, crap, I need to start to close this down. No. Thank you so much, Frances, for coming on the show today.
Thank you. Great.
It was awesome diving into that subconscious world with you. And we close every single show by thanking you for showing up for us today, but for yourself, for all your clients and your 7, it sounds like you mentioned like 8 and 9 books that you're in the process of getting out the next year too. You're on a roll.
After this creative sort of portal opened, and it's been pouring out of me. And I just want to say all the things I write about are on my YouTube channel for free. I run a metaphysical college. The lectures are on there. The workbooks are for free on my website. I sell my books, and people like to have the books, but everything is available for everyone to do this work with or without a teacher. That really is at the core of my mission.
Oh, well, thank you for that. Thank you so much. And how may we, the listeners, as an act of gratitude, be of service for you in return today?
Look at your shadow. Ask that question. What don't I like about it? Find it in yourself. I'm not a believer that I heal anybody. I always say I do my work at my kitchen table. And if I do my work, that's how I change the world. And just do your work. Look at your shadow. Own it. Join the club. And that's how you change the world. That's the act of service towards me.
Mm. Yeah, I think it was a quote. If you want to change the world, change yourself first. That's very true.
It happens at your kitchen table. It really is such an internal process. And there's a Zen koan that says, chop wood, get enlightened, chop wood. I look no different than I did 5 years ago before cancer. And I've lost my hair and a lot happened during those 5 years, but everything changed internally. So the transmutation happens on the inside and therefore the external matches it. So this really is work you do in private at your kitchen table. So yes, I invite everybody to look at the shadow. Can I say one last thing? I have this theory that the universe is a metaphor for the universal cookie dough, like a Toll House cookie sort of. And I'll just show you. I know that your listeners can't see it, but I have this little cookie dough. It's to remind me that I'm just like one little piece of it. And I call this my narcissistic cookie dough. And we're all narcissists and prideful and envious and gluttons. I mean, we're just these things. We're human. And there's so much joy in just joining the narcissistic cookie club. Like, come on down, you know, and just be part of it. Because once you understand that, then you can man those fires and really shine your light in the divine way through this beautiful vehicle that is your body. And it doesn't limit you, but rather contains you for you to do what you come to do. So that's why I stress so much. Look at your shadow, ask where you judge something and where it's linked to yourself.
Ooh, mic drop. Thank you so much, Frances, for coming on the show today.
Thank you, Lauren. It's been a pleasure.
And remember, open up, surrender, trust, and let your body lead the way.